Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I am S. Narayan, visiting senior research fellow at ISES, and with me is Mr. Vikram Singh Mehta. Mr. Mehta is currently the executive chairman of Brookings India and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institutions. He left the Indian Administrative Service after just a few years and spent a major part of his later career with Shell International, becoming the chairman of the Shell Group of Companies in India in 1994. He writes and speaks extensively on matters relating to energy, especially petroleum and natural gas. He is with us today to share his views on South Asia's oil industry, challenging times ahead. And Mr. Mehta, I just request you to take us through what's exactly happening in the industry, why the oil prices have become volatile, what it means for oil in the future, and what it means for the different countries in South Asia, especially India. So over to you, Mr. Mehta.
Thank you, Dr. Narayan. I mean, it's a great pleasure to be talking to you. It's also very humbling, since you are perhaps more of an expert on this subject than I am. But let me address your questions. let's start with the perhaps provide the to the oil industry. We ended 2019 with an average crude oil price of about $64-$65. And in part, that price was upheld because of the agreement within OPEC and also between OPEC and Russia to cut production and to counter the somewhat bearish global demand sentiment. We, in early 2020, as you all know, COVID crisis hit the world, and demand really started to slow down quite dramatically. In March of this year, for reasons best known to Mohammed bin Salman and Vladimir Putin, both Russia and Saudi Arabia decided that they would dissolve further discussions on cutbacks, production cutbacks. Saudi Arabia said it was determined to hold on to its market share. Russia apparently wanted to push U.S. shale industry to the wall. But the upshot of this disagreement, you may say, or breakdown in talks between Saudi and Russia at a time when COVID was really destroying demand, especially in the transportation and industry and in industry, led to an absolute collapse in prices. And in March, the Brent price went to around $30. This situation, you might say, went into a historic kind of a downturn earlier last, when on account of a peculiarity of the futures trading market, the West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. Benchmark crude, went into negative territory. But I mean, one can go into an explanation as to why that happened, but it in effect reflected two fundamental realities of the crude market. One was that it is oversupplied, and two, that on account of oversupply, the world was running out of storage space for for crude. And the problem remains. Demand has collapsed to the extent of between 5 million barrels a day to 30 million barrels a day over this quarter. This is as much as OPEC produces. And so you can just imagine what the consequences. On the other hand, US alone is producing in excess of 2 million barrels a day, and they're finding it difficult to store the excess capacity. Brent crude, on the other hand, has not crashed, in part because it's a seaborne crude. It can still be stored in tankers, but that space is also fast filling up. So we are now facing a situation where the oil industry is it's sort of struggling. It might be some companies are in the middle of a debt. At these prices, literally hundreds of companies are going to face bankruptcy because they're not certainly able to meet their production costs. They're not able to service their debt. And that I estimate that at $20 a barrel, maybe 400 companies will go belly up before the end of next year. And at $10 a barrel, it'll be about maybe even 700. There is also, of course, the other consequence, which is that all oil-producing countries are facing a severe economic and financial stress. Just as an index of the severity, Saudi Arabia would require around $80 a barrel oil to just simply balance its budget. Algeria requires more than $100 a barrel. The most robust is in fact Qatar, which still requires $40 to $45 to balance its budget. So you're going to find all of these countries, whether it's the Gulf countries, which have a relatively low marginal cost of production, whether it's the high absorber, high cost countries like Nigeria or Russia, all oil producing countries are going to face a political crisis on account of political and social crisis on account of the economics of oil. So what does it mean for India? If I may come to that, and then for the region, and perhaps we can, then I'll stop. And perhaps ask you, maybe you'd want to push me in a particular direction. But clearly, India is also facing a massive economic crisis. The economy was already slowing down before the COVID hit us, and today we are struggling. When you look at the oil industry, there is a complete lockdown in the country. There's been a lockdown for 6 weeks. As a result, the refining industry is now, I would say, running at between 50 to 65% utilization. There is no ullage. There's no storage capacity. Those refiners that have that are integrated with petrochemical plants and have complex refineries have been able to change mix and still generate a positive margin. Many of the other refiners are struggling. India has a refining capacity of about 5 million barrels a day. Of that, 3.2 million barrels a day is held by the public sector companies, and 1.8 million barrels a day are held by the private companies. The private companies have highly complex refineries, and they have been the forefront of the industry exports of motor gasoline and diesel. Now, those exports are facing two problems. One is that freight rates have gone up. As a result, the already depressed refining margins are now confronting a further difficulty because the freight rates are now significantly higher. And you might say that by the time they reach Singapore, some of the margins almost totally wiped out because of the freight, the excess freight. So all in all, I better stop here. We are facing, the industry is facing perhaps the biggest crisis that it's ever faced. The oil companies are facing an existential problem. India has certainly benefited from the terms of trade advantage, but it too now needs to face the question, how can it maximize the advantage of low prices? How can it maximize the advantage of a volatile market? And that question has yet to be answered within our policy, within the decision-making sort of structure. Let me just stop here, Dr. Narayanan. Does that answer broadly your question?
Yes. But taking it forward, one is the issue of the refiners. And the refiners are going to be stressed because the refining margins are going to be extremely low. And the refined products are going to find it difficult to find a market, especially in the lockdown. There's not going to be so much transportation, so diesel consumption, petrol consumption, aviation fuel consumption will all drop. Once the market opens up, I can well visualize that. All right, all this will come back into traction. But at the same time, what is going to happen to companies which are exploration companies like our ONGC and Oil India Limited? And what is going to happen to, I would say, even countries like Singapore, which have huge refining capacity? They'd be wanting to find markets. And where would these markets be? So, and then, after this, I would like to ask you a couple of questions on the downstream industry.
So I think, let me just answer the first question on the upstream, Dr. Narayan. The upstream companies are facing also a severe crisis, as you know. The prices have collapsed, so their returns are depressed as it is. But on top of that, of course, they continue to pay the various taxes that the government has imposed, royalty, cess, and the profit petroleum share that they pass on to the government has not in any way been reduced. So I think it would be probably correct to say that whether it's ONGC Oil India or whether it's Cairn Petroleum or whether it's Reliance BP, you know, the three or four companies that are in the upstream, every one of them is struggling. I would just add one more point is that that in India, gas prices are also subject to a ceiling price, especially gas prices coming from fields that are deep water and in high temperature, ultra deep and high temperature gas fines. So in brief, unless the government prepares to either defer royalty, defer cess, and remove for the ceiling on gas prices, you're going to find that exploration in India is going to fall pretty dramatically. And also the productivity of gas fields is going to fall because it's uneconomic. Insofar as refining is concerned, I think we have here also as to really hard look at how we are approaching not only the international market, but also the domestic market when it comes to marketing our refined products. Firstly, the public sector companies and the private companies don't coordinate their marketing efforts whatsoever. So to that extent, they're competing with each other in the market, and they're in fact reducing the exportable margin or the realizable margin from exports. And as I just mentioned earlier, one feature of this competitiveness, which leads to a reduction in margin, is it has to do with the has to do with freight rates. India brings in 70 VLCCs every month. You know, that is about 10% of the entire VLCC market in the world market. But we still pay a much higher freight than many other countries because the short haul firstly, because we are not able to leverage our buying power effectively. And secondly, we are usually charged rates because it's a short haul transfer from the Middle East to Indian subcontinent. This is just an example of avoidable, you might say, costs. Were we to coordinate our activities and were we to actually perhaps go beyond this idea of constantly issuing a tender and in announcing to the entire world what our plans were, and rather being somewhat more discreet in terms of our purchasing, we might be able to realize a higher margin, both because of lower freight rates and also because we would be able to place our product in the international market more effectively and more economically. The other point I think we should perhaps bring to mind here is that at times we import product even though we might have a surplus in the country. Take LPG for the moment. We are importing LPG right now even though there is actually domestic capacity available. And as a result of the imports, we are clogging up our ports. And that again is leading to a higher costs, whether it's demurrage costs or whether it's freight costs. So the first point I'd like to make is that it's not a question of whether we're going to have a problem marketing our product. I think the real question is, can we coordinate our efforts so that both the public sector companies and the private companies are working together so in order to maximize or leverage the fact that we still remain one of the biggest markets available to both the crude producer as well as for anyone involved in the energy or oil sector.
Just take you on that one step further. Therefore, what do you think should be the government response to this in terms of, I would say, both supply and demand and as well as pricing? And what should be the government strategy? And if you can just extend it to say, to look at just Bangladesh and Pakistan. Bangladesh is a big natural oil, natural gas consuming country. Is it in a better position, do you think? And what about Pakistan? It's getting a lot of oil from Saudi Arabia. Will it be better off than us? Just these 2-3 thoughts.
Right. So as far as the Indian government standpoint, I might be a bit naive here, and you please correct me if I am, but from where I sit, I believe that we need to do 3 things. One, we need to create greater strategic petroleum reserves. Today we have, I think, all of 30 million tons of reserves of capacity, or 30 million barrels, not 30 million tons, 30 million barrels only, in 3 small locations, 2 of which are not even, or 1 of which is not even connected by pipeline to the market. What I would advise is that the government actually create a large strategic reserve in a hub, like maybe the refinery hub of Jamnagar, which is where IOC, Indian Oil Company, where Reliance and where Nayara have their refineries. This is a hub that's connected to the market. The pipeline network exists. And we need to actually create a very large reserve. Perhaps from 30 million barrels, we should go to about 450 million barrels, because we are going to face a volatile oil market in the coming years. And one fact that we cannot escape is that we will be dependent on imports for meeting our oil requirements. So that's point number one. Point number two is, I think our traders, especially those who work in our public sector entities, must be empowered to take advantage of the volatility in the market. I'm not suggesting for one moment that they should turn into Wall Street speculators. But I do feel that we must give them the protection and the safeguard to be able to take advantage of the volatility that exists today. I mean, a very crazy thought that ran through my head, and it's totally impractical, was that what if India were to actually buy the WTI futures, June futures, take delivery, bring the product to India, and store it somewhere. Now, I don't know. I know it's academic, because A, the traders don't have the empowerment to go out and do that. B, we don't have the capacity to storage capacity to store. But the idea is that at a time like this, when prices are negative territory, a country like ours, which will need oil, needs to be able to leverage its buying power to secure its requirements forward. So the second point I'm making is that traders must be given greater flexibility. And here, again, I say the traders of the public sector companies and the private companies must coordinate. So the crude requirements of Reliance Petroleum, Nayara Petroleum, and the public sector companies, which is 4.5 million barrels a day, were we to actually work together, I mean, not we, meaning the government, the public sector companies and the private companies, there is no way that we would be paying a slightly higher a price on the crude that is sold into our markets. Which is what is the case today. On a trailing basis, the price that India pays is higher than what other markets, other consumers pay. So again, I say that there needs to be greater coordination between the government entities and the private sector. On the final point I'd make as far as India is concerned is that we really need to look to shift towards gas. And this brings in Bangladesh as well, of course. The fact is that the oil market is going to be volatile. I think I've said it before. But this volatility also is because the countries that produce oil are really countries that have, on export oil, are countries that are politically and socially, on fragile political and social foundations, and now on fragile economic foundations. Whereas there are a multiple of countries around the world that export gas. We will not be dependent on only the Middle East for our energy requirements or our fuel requirements. Were we to shift to gas, we could import from Africa, we could import from Australia, we could import also from Bangladesh. And here, of course, there is the question of gas pipelines. So we need to create the network within our country. We need to create a gas pipeline national grid that connects Northeast India, East India, South India, to the gas producers. So I think Bangladesh is certainly in a better position, given that a large part of it's a gas producer. And I think this is an opportunity for us to resume conversations with them on seeing whether we could build a gas pipeline grid that connects Bangladesh to India. It's complicated, I have no doubt about it. As far as Pakistan is concerned, sir, you know, Pakistan is in a very dire state. I mean, I can't see how Pakistan economy can get out the mess that it's in. Yes, it imports from Saudi Arabia, but that's not really going to be enough for it. It needs to be bailed out, and perhaps it's turning to China to bail it out. But the Pakistan economy is beyond repair as far as I can see it.
Thanks very much, Vikram. I mean, two important policy suggestions that you have made of increasing strategic reserves, of leveraging the low prices by getting into futures, and much more importantly, that India needs to look at transforming a lot of its consumption into natural gas and, you know, change a kind of a paradigm of depending only on oil and oil products. I think these three are worthy of your recommendation to the government, very, very much so. And I do hope we'll see a follow-up. So we are running out of time. So just an opportunity to thank you very, very much for sparing this time, for giving some important insights into this problem. And to all the people who are going to watch us, do visit our website to learn more about the work of the Institute of South Asian Studies. And thank you very much, Vikram.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Dr. Narayan.